The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, Q&A edition, where today we're going to answer at least a handful of questions from our listeners. These questions come in mostly via email, but you can send them in yourself going to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or we do have the technical ability to take a live phone call. So if you are ever listening live, we record these live, usually starting between 1:30 and 2 or so on Mountain Time on Tuesdays. If you're listening live through the streaming app or off of our website or through Mixler, which is the streaming service that we use to live stream these things, you can call in to the phone number 970-530-0556. That'll get you to the front desk, and they will come up into the recording studio here and let us know that you're on the line, and we can jump right over to you. But most people listen in and then just send us questions via email. I know Jim has a slew of emails that we can try to dig through today. We'll probably also hear shortly about his success and or failure elk hunting. I haven't heard what the final tally was.
You haven't heard yet?
I have not.
I thought I told you.
No, I've said like three words today so far.
So far. So you don't know. Not well, good luck.
Oh.
First,
I knew there wasn't much luck through
time,
it, but
no,
I hadn't heard
no.
the final,
it,
final.
It was not it was fun to be out there for a week of hunting, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But I normally go the first week of October. This would have been the last week of October I went instead, and it was because of the landowner that we leased the land from could not accompany us have us come the first week of October, so he asked for us to come the last week, and I was hesitant because I was worried the weather would be bad, and also the first week of October we only hunt cow elk, we don't hunt bull, and the first week of October is still the rut in that part of Colorado, meaning the bulls are out looking for the ladies. And the ladies all congregate together. So you can see big herds of 50, 60, 70 cow elk in the pastures on this private ranch. And they're all trying to get the bull's attention, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's rather much easier to find a herd of 80 elk running around than it is to find one or two cows by themselves. And I was worried because the rut would be over and then the herds tend to break up. And that's exactly what happened. I never really saw a big herd. I saw three cows all by themselves and then four cows by themselves in the week that I was hunting. I had a very good opportunity on the first three, but they were behind some very thin oak trees. This part of Colorado has a lot of oak trees. And I was afraid to fire Chris through the trees because I was afraid that the bullet would ricochet and wound the animal, and I never want to do that. But that's what happened. And then the second group of elk that I saw, he had us in the afternoon hunting out of some blinds. They have some blinds there. And he had us sitting in a blind, and I was sitting in a blind, Chris, for literally 5 hours.
Staying nice and warm?
Well, he had a little heater in there, but I was afraid of dying of propane because of the CO2, so I kept opening the window. But you know me. I can't sit and relax for 5 hours. And I know you have to wait, Chris, until it gets close to dark when the elk get active. And it was about 5:30 in the afternoon, and I just thought, okay, maybe I'll go out just for a quick walk around. After 5 hours, I couldn't wait another 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. I was like, let me just out of here. I was going stir crazy. So I quietly opened the door and walked outside, and I start walking, and I went a little further and then a little further. And before you know it, I've been walking for 25 minutes, and it's starting to get dark. And I'm thinking, holy moly, I got to get back.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost didn't bring my rifle. I thought, oh, I'm going to go walk for a little bit. So I turn and I start walking back. And directly across, as I started approaching the blind, directly across where I would have been if I would have stayed inside the blind, were three cow elk. Cows, not even bulls, cow elk. Mm. And they didn't know I was there. And I sighted in with my rangefinder, and they were 430 yards away. And for my 30-odd six, maybe some people listening would feel comfortable at that range. I didn't. I usually will go out 250, 300 yards tops. And I, again, back to the I don't want to wound an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't feel comfortable. But I knew if I could get into the blind, because I pre-sight in all the areas, I knew if I could get into the blind, they're only 250 to 300 yards from me. It seems every step I took made a noise. And no matter how quiet I tried to be trying to get back into that blind, they eventually heard me and skedaddled.
Mm.
And then I was mad, mostly at myself, for staying in there for 5 hours.
Patient enough.
I couldn't wait 30 more minutes. No, I had to get out and do a quick little walk. And then it wasn't even a quick little walk. It turned out to be a 25-minute walk. And I realized, holy moly, I got to turn around and get back. And by the time I got back, SOL, as they say.
Mm.
So anyways, no elk this year. First time in 6 years I was skunked.
Did anybody in the party get an elk?
No, no. Nobody? My friend flew out from Massachusetts. We, even though we hunt, quote unquote, together, when we get to the ranch, we separate to cover more area. And he never even saw an elk. I'd come back every night. He'd come back and I'd tell him, oh, yeah, I saw three. Oh, yeah, I saw four. He's like, I didn't see any. He was like Charlie Brown getting a rock at every door. Right. He's like, I didn't see any. I didn't see any. And he still had fun. He said a week away from work in Massachusetts was worth it for him to be out in Colorado. He was taking photos. It's a beautiful area. And he just had a ton of photos and everything. And he really enjoyed it. But he agrees it was much better hunting the first week of October when the cow elk are in groups of 80 than trying to find some. One gentleman did. He was not in my group on the first day, did harvest a cow elk. So he did luck out. And he was in his 70s, and that made me feel good. I thought, okay, I still got a lot more years of hunting in front of me because he harvested his. And his wife was with him, and they were all happy. And so they got their cow, but nope, I didn't get an elk.
Hmm. Well, that's too bad.
No.
At least you got a lot of fish to go through.
I do, and I still have a ton of elk from my previous hunts. It's not like I'm short on elk, but I usually always get a new elk. And this year, I was hunting with purpose this year. My buddy lives in Massachusetts, a half hour from my family, and he ships his meat home.
Oh, you were going to ship. That's right. You were going to ship meat.
I was
going to
ship,
him.
Right. Yeah. I said, well, can I put a lot of my elk in with yours? It'll lower your price, but allow my family to go to the house and get. And that's my family was looking forward to this.
Mm-hmm.
Mom was almost ready to buy a freezer. And I told him, just wait for me to get the elk first.
Yeah.
And she did. She didn't go out and buy the freezer, and which was good because she wouldn't have anything to put in said freezer. But this year I was really hunting for them. I was going to ship most of the elk back. Mm. I was going to keep a little bit of the tenderloins, but ship most of the elk to them. And because there's a lot of people there. My sister loves to cook, and they were just looking forward to it. And
that's too bad.
Yeah, they weren't too happy when I called them to tell them. Anyways, I don't want to bore our listeners with any more hunting stories, but I know a couple of podcast listeners are hunters because they have reached out to me. So, no, I did not get an elk this year. I hope everyone else listening who is a hunter, you're more lucky and you can fill your freezer full of meat. I'm not a sport hunter. I don't hunt for trophy. I hunt for meat. And to me, it's the best meat going because it's natural, hormone-free, free-range, grass-fed, all these euphemisms you see now on meat. Wild game, especially elk, you know that. Mm-hmm. Elk is so mild, it's wonderful. And I was looking forward to shipping a lot home, but I couldn't. Maybe next year.
Maybe.
All right. I saw you and Laura earlier diligently mm-hmm. chatting away. Do we have a caller?
No.
Well, that was a hell of a long conversation for no caller.
Well, we got things going on.
Okay. Is it a surprise party for me?
No. Also, no.
Could consider one.
Oh, we could consider one. That's another day.
All right. All right. Well, we've got a boatload of questions, as mm-hmm. always, so let's start getting through some of these. The first one is fairly easy. I think you can answer it quite well. And the next one is on Social Security, and I know it's also easy that you'll be able to answer. So I will read, you will answer. How's that?
Perfect.
All right. I have no idea where this guy's from because he doesn't say. Darn it, I always like to reference the state. Okay, but anyways, he begins, I have a Roth IRA question.
Mm-hmm.
I have been doing Roth IRA via the back door since 2011. As well as a spousal backdoor for my wife. I am over the income limits in order to put money in as a direct contribution. I am also 7 years older than my wife, and she works very, very, very part-time. I guess she works very, very little. Mm-hmm. So she works very, very part-time. I plan to retire at age 65 and start withdrawals from my 401k. Can you please review exactly what will be considered earned income for me at that point? And if I can continue to do Roth contributions based on my dividends, withdrawals from my 401k, and my real estate income. My wife will likely work very, very, very part-time. So long as she makes more than $14,000 a year, she should be able to contribute either through the front door or back door for us as a contribution. Let me see. Where did I leave off? As a contribution. And no, I'm sorry. I got confused on what he wrote. My wife will likely work mm-hmm. part-time. So long as she makes greater than $14,000 a year, she should be able to mm-hmm. contribute the max. Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Either during the front or back door.
Yep.
And could I now become the non-working spouse even though I am older than her? So he's asking a mm-hmm. lot of questions here. I do not plan to do Roth conversions because I already have a large Roth bucket as my new 401k contributions go into the Roth only. Why I would like to continue to do this is it makes more sense for me to take my dividends from my taxable account and put them into a Roth and also get $14,000 into a Roth from his wife's earnings. Thanks in advance. So he's asking a few things here. Mm-hmm. So the first part, let's back up.
Yep.
The question can be a little confusing the way he wrote it, so I'm going to try to divine what I think he's asking. His first question, can you please review exactly what is considered earned income?
Earned income for purposes of the contributions is earned income from work. Can be self-employment income, so you can have your own business, but it's income from work, so dividends, interest, 401k distributions, none of those are going to qualify.
Neither does rental income
contribution,
unless you're passive.
Unless you're running a rental firm where you are an employee of this firm that might be a little firm that just manages all of your real estate properties. But if you just have one rental where you're receiving rental income, that doesn't count. Some people think, oh, that'll count as self-employment income. No, they've put the kibosh on that. That is not going to count.
Just look, listener, at the difference between active and passive income almost. Earned income is essentially active income. Look at it that way. You are actively going out, trading your time and your efforts and your abilities and receiving pay for it. You are actively doing something. Passive income, even though it's going to be taxed to you the same way as active income, it's going to be taxable income to you. Now, some interest is not going to be taxed the same way. Let's just skip over that little nuance. Mm-hmm. But dividends, interest, capital gains, rental income, merely owning a rental and collecting rent, you might think it's active because you're going out there 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon unclogging someone's toilet or replacing a light bulb if you're managing the property yourself, isn't considered for purposes of contributing to a Roth earned income.
Or purposes for contributing into a non-Roth, into
right,
a traditional.
Traditional. Yeah. Now, what we were saying is if you started a legitimate company, Chris Stein's Property Management Company, LLC, and he went out and started a legitimate company, and that company is buying the rental properties, and Chris becomes an employee of that company, and that company pays Social Security and Medicare taxes and unemployment taxes on Chris's income, and Chris is drawing income, even though it's just one person, he's drawing income by managing the properties, then yes, he could use that income to contribute to a Roth. But most people, 99.9% of the people who have rental properties, they own the rentals themselves. They may manage it themselves or outsource it to a management company, but they're only collecting rent. That's considered passive income, not active, if you will. And even though it's taxed as income, it does not count for contributions to retirement accounts.
Correct.
Or at least,
but I mean, I think in his case, if his wife is really going to be making $14,000 a year, this becomes a moot point. Although it almost sounded like he thought he could have his own income and put money in, and then also put in $14,000 between the two of them because of his wife. No, that's double dipping. It's doesn't matter who is recognizing the income. You're still limited by the $6,000 dollars if you're under 50, or $7,000 if you're over 50. Contribution limits into a Roth. But as long as she makes the $14,000, you can. He might have just been saying the interest he gets, he'd like to shove into a Roth. Well, as long as she unlocks the door to putting money in the Roth by having earnings for the married couple, even if he's older, that has nothing at all to do with it. So her earning would give them as a couple the ability to put in $7,000 each into their own Roths, and he could fund his using the money that he technically got from that interest. Now, that's because these dollars are what we call fungible. You don't technically have to take the dollars that came home with your wife and take those exact dollars with those exact serial numbers and put them into the Roth. He could take his, and you know, his wife could maybe use her money for spending money or whatever she uses it for. Just the fact that she has earned income would give them the ability to fund the Roth for each of them at $7,000. And they could then get away from doing the back door, too. They can just put it right in the front door if she's the only one working.
So his income will be low enough at that point. He'll be well under the 200-something thousand that a married couple can earn, and he should have no problem. He did ask, does it matter that he is older than his wife? No, it does not. The age of the non-working spouse does not matter. You also mentioned that as long as your wife earns $14,000, she should be able to contribute the max. Your wife only needs to earn $7,000. for her to contribute the max. Remember, your contributions need to go into yours. Mm-hmm. Her contributions need to go into hers. She needs to earn $7,000 to get $7,000 into hers. She needs to earn another $7,000 for you to get $7,000 into yours. So earning $14,000 is to max out her contribution is too much. She only needs to earn $7,000 to get her $7,000 in. She needs to earn $14,000 to get your $7,000 in. But it does not matter if you are younger or older or the same age. Doesn't matter. You're the non-working spouse, so it doesn't matter. What matters is that her income is also earned income. It is not passive income. It's active income or earned income. And it sounds to me like it is, even though she's working, as you put it, very, very part-time. If she can earn $14,000, she can put in $7,000. You can put in $7,000 through the front door, as you worded it, not through the back door. Okay. And I think, was that the only questions he had?
I think that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think we covered both of those for him. So yeah. Hopefully we did. Here is a Social Security question that came in from Texas. We will call, this person is female, so we'll call her Georgette from Texas. I'm 62 and filed for my early retirement benefits in June of 2019, but I am also a part-time realtor, working only for family and friends. And so far this year, which is my grace year, I have made $12,768 for the year. But I am about to make an additional $5,400, which will put me over the limit of $17,640. It's actually $5,460 she's going to earn, which will put me over the limit of $17,640 by $588. How is this going to affect my Social Security? Will it just be $1 reduction for every $2 over the limit? So will I owe Social Security an additional $294 because I earned $588 over the limit? If so, how do I report this overage? Thank you so much for your answer.
Yes, she's actually done the math correctly, although she mentioned the grace year when she isn't wanting to elect the grace year, most likely. The grace year allows her to continue working and have the earnings test applied on a monthly basis, or even stop working and have it applied on a monthly basis instead of a yearly basis. But for her, because of the timing of this cash flow, she's not making a set amount every month. She's going to get a massive 500, you know, compared to her total income for the year, it's a massive lump sum payment of $5,460. If they apply that in 1 month, she's going to eliminate her entire Social Security check that month. So you actually, in this case, don't want to elect the grace year. In this case, you want them to apply the annual earnings limit, just as they would by basic default on a yearly basis in the years before your full retirement age year. And you're right, in 2019, the earnings limit is $17,640, and they will reduce your Social Security benefit $1 for every $2 over that amount. So you did the math correctly. The $294 you're going to owe to Social Security. There's a couple ways to do that. If you know that's going to happen, if you're sure that's going to happen, you can report it now immediately to Social Security, and they will reduce your current benefits through this year. If not, what will happen is they will discover it later on, and you will owe them that $294 as a lump sum. And usually in an instance like that, they will give you the ability to just pay it back to them, or they will withhold it from your Social Security checks. But if you know you owe it, it's probably cleanest just to take care of it. So it's kind of up to you. We're towards the end of the year here, so kind of hit or miss whether they'd be able to process your information in time to withhold benefits this year. But it's a small enough amount, I don't think it's going to really disrupt what you're doing. But the ramifications of you earning this, of course, is what you mentioned. If the numbers you gave are correct, you are going to have been overpaid in 2019 $294 worth of Social Security benefits, and they'll simply ask for those back one way or the other. If you know early enough in the year to tell them, they will lower your benefits every month so that you aren't overpaid, essentially, for the year. But we are now in November, so I think at this point it's probably too late. You'll have been paid too much in their eyes, and they will recover that from you likely next year. But the key here is that the dollar amount is correct. You didn't go way, way, way over and have a much, much more significant reduction. Your reduction in this case is only the $294 figure. Clear as mud, Jim?
Perfect. Great. Sorry, I was
He's busy reading the next question.
I was reading the next question.
It looks multiple pages, it might be a little long.
it is very long. I think this one is going to take a little bit of, I got to break this up a little bit. I was going to answer one part of it, though, but...
just as a hint, if you're sending in your own questions,
if you can keep
them concise and kind of narrowly focused, you'll get them answered more quickly. These big long ones, and periodically we'll get one of these big long ones that'll have six or seven things going on in them, and they're giving us details about 14 different elements of their life, and it's not really conducive to a Q&A kind of a format. But sometimes we'll have little pieces that we'll pick out of a long email like this and answer.
This question, but, and I was just on the phone with the Ed Slot Group for some other issues I'm helping some people with. I'm going to ask this question to you because I want to get your opinion, but we're not going to actually answer it until I run it by Ed Slot because I don't think he can do what he wants to do, and I want to get your opinion on it. But that's only one. This is a three. You can see how long this is.
Yeah.
I mean, he asks a ton more questions too. But let's address his first question. So he begins, I am 59. Oh, where is he from? Virginia, but born in Boston. Wow, I should have got to his question earlier. This is from June. Oh, my God. Well, he should hopefully know it takes us forever to answer questions. This is from June, but he is from Boston, so he should have roasted. Well, if he would have put, I'm from Boston and go Pats. Did you see the poor Pats lose?
You know, I didn't have the pleasure of watching it live, but I saw
pleasure. No, there was no pleasure.
I saw the results and smiled a little bit and saw little snippets of what went on there. Yeah, it looked like a
Pats played like shit.
Fun
I mean,
game.
There's no way of putting it. I'll say a swear word on our podcast. They played like shit Sunday night. I didn't think they were going to win. They haven't really played anyone that great, and we have our offensive line is starting three rookies. Because three of our offensive linemen starters are out, and they can't give any type of running game going, and they just looked horrendous. And kudos to the Ravens. They just outplayed Belichick at every turn, and Pats looked like crap. But the one thing the Pats sometimes do is take losses like that and come back with a vengeance, so we'll see. Anyways, he is originally from Boston, but living in Virginia. We will call him George. And again, listener George, I am not 100% convinced. I'm going to explain this. I'm going to give what I think is my answer, but I will confirm this with the Ed Slot Group.
Okay.
But I want to get your idea too. He says, I am 59. My wife is 9 years younger than I am. My wife works for the UPS, USPS, United States Postal Service, and is covered by FERS, the Federal Employee Retirement System. In 2026, she will retire with a reduced pension.
So she's going to retire early?
Yes. I'm going to skip a lot of what he's writing in here because it's just personal stuff about himself. Here's the nitty-gritty. Here is the ball I need to figure out and how to field it. About $500,000 of our traditional retirement savings is in her TSP plan, Thrift Savings Plan. Now, that's the retirement account, listeners, kind of like the government's equivalent of a 401k, if you will. They get a pension. This woman is going to get a pension, but she also has a savings account. She puts in about 5%. The government's going to match about 5%. It's a little different than that, but 5% is very, very close. So she has about $500,000 in the TSP. If she retires before she turns 55, it is going to make it hard for us to draw down that account prior to turning on our Social Security. But he indicated, what he indicated is in 2026, she could retire at age 56 and 8 months. She might retire earlier. My answer to him is going to be wait till 56 and 8 months, right? Yeah. Retire. And listener, I'll get to this in a second. I think she can set up substantially equal periodic payments, that's otherwise known as 72T payments, and draw out about $22,000 per year from her TSP. She will turn 59 and a half in mid-2028, so we would be able to pull out $73,000 from her TSP in each of the last 2 years before the tax year I turn 70 and keep our taxable income in the 12% bracket. I disagree with his math on that a little. But what he's essentially asking is, can they turn on 72T payments? For those who don't know a 72T, and we received an email. Someone wants us to do an EDU show on 72Ts. I think I will. But in brief, 72T is a series of substantially equal periodic payments. Generally, people take them out once a year from an account that would be normally subject to the 10% early withdrawal penalty. But if you set it up, and we're not going to get into this show how you set it up. We'll do that on an EDU show. If you set it up right and you take your annual payment, as long as you take the payments for at least 5 years or until you turn 59 and a half, whatever is longer, the payments will not be subject to the 10% early withdrawal penalty. He's wondering if she retires early, not in 2026, but earlier, if she retires before that and she's going to be subject to the 10% penalty because she's not age 55, if she retires before age 55, he wants to set it up as a 72T payment from her TSP. His question is this: would we be able to continue to convert $10,000 a year from her TSP into a Roth before Social Security kicks in? Or will this series of substantially equal periodic payments essentially prevent them from doing that? I don't think they can convert. And I'm 99% sure that's what Ed told us once. Because if you alter the account balance at all that's paying the 72T, that blows it up. And even if you took it from the TSP and put it into a Roth TSP, I think that blows up the 72T. So I'm going to say, listener, no, you can't. With a big asterisk next to that, I'm going to ask the Ed Slot Group. But I am 99% sure that is considered a material, what's the word the IRS uses? Material change, even though that's not the word they use, to the account, and that blows it up. What are your thoughts?
I haven't run into one of those where they're trying to do both. So it would have to be a specific rule like you're referring to, and so it's all going to come down to that rule, and I'm not familiar with the specific rule on altering the account in by doing conversions. If that actually counts and is going to blow up or submarine the SEP, substantially equal periodic payments, the SEPPs. So yeah, I don't know. That's definitely a time where it's good that we've got the ability to contact the Ed Slot Group to
because his wife's about 50 now, so I guess he's asking if she retires now,
even before 55. Yeah,
before 55, like she doesn't want to work another 5 years. I get that. If listeners, in case you're wondering why we're talking about age 55, If she was to wait until the year she turns 55, she doesn't have to be 55. Right. She's 50 now. So she waits till 2024, January of 2024. If she retires January 1st or January 2nd of 2024, not December 31st of 2023, but if she retires in the year she turns 55, she will not be subject to the 10% early withdrawal penalty on any distributions from the TSP. That might be the easiest thing to do.
And it might be shorter than that if she has a birthday here at the end of the year. Maybe she's turning 51 here in the next couple of months before the end of the year. So that means she only has to wait 4 more years till 2023 instead of 5. So it's kind of depends on her birthday.
He never told us when his wife thinks of retiring or when she wants to retire. He just said if she waits to 2026, when she turns 56 and 8 months, she can retire with her reduced annuity payment, which is the pension payment from FERS. I guess she's considering retiring sooner. If she's going to retire after 55 or in the year she turns 55, the 72T is a moot point. Don't even worry about it. But another thing you might want to consider.
Go ahead. I just had a thought.
Is to figure out how much you need. Is it really $22,000? Or are you just saying, based on your calculations, $500,000 is going to generate in substantially equal periodic payments, and there's websites that'll do the calculations for you. You have to look at the IRS sets the interest rate or the expected growth rate that you have to use in figuring out 72T payments, and there's a lot of calculations that go into figuring it out. I just use websites now to figure that out. I try to avoid 72T like the plague because it's very easy to mess it up. Then you have to pay a 10% penalty on all distributions that were taken. So if you mess it up in the last year and you've taken 4, 5, 6, 7 years of payments, you got to go back and pay a 10% penalty on all those missed not missed distributions, but all those taken distributions. Mm-hmm. You owe 10% penalty on all of them.
Because they're all considered early.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So I try to avoid them like the plague. But you never indicated to us, listener, if you felt $22,000 is what you need. You said you needed additional money and that the $500,000 TSP would generate $22,000. You didn't say if that's enough or not. I'm guessing because you're still considering doing Roth conversions, it's probably more than you need because somehow you're coming up with the money to pay the taxes on a conversion. So why don't you determine how much money you really need? And maybe you only need $200,000 to generate that under 72T payment schedule. Move $200,000 from the $500,000 TSP. You can do this now. As of September 15th, the rules have changed with the TSP. Take out what you need to generate under 72T payment schedules, whichever one you're choosing. I don't know which one you're choosing, the RMD method, the annuity method. I don't know which method you're using to determine your 72T payments. But again, in my hypothetical, maybe you only need $200,000 to generate what you need. So move $200,000 from the $500,000 to an IRA, subject that IRA to the 72T, and you still have the $300,000 mm-hmm. that you can start converting.
Right.
Because I don't think you can't change and go, but you can't add money nor take additional money out of any account subject to 72T. And that's why I don't think you're going to be able to do a conversion, because even though you're still going to see it all in the quote unquote TSP, it's in a different account at the TSP. And I think the IRS isn't going to be copacetic with that. So I don't think you're going to be able to do 72T and a conversion, but we will confirm with Ed Slott and we'll answer this next week again. But what I'm going to encourage you to do, because you didn't give us, even though you wrote a very long 3-page email, you didn't tell us if you need all 22,000 or not.
Right.
That would be my suggestion.
Yeah, and that was what was dawning on me before you started talking about it. Maybe we could split it up, 72T part of it, and have the other part available for conversions. So,
right.
Yeah, you're like minds.
Like minds think alike. I'm going to skip the rest. He gets into a lot more questions, but we would have to really digest this a little bit. He does ask a cute little what if. Here's a trivia question for you guys. How many different 5-year rules are there that are related to retirement planning? I can think of 4. I think we'll talk about this next week as part of that. So here's a little trivia question for all of you listeners. How many different 5-year rules related to retirement planning can you come up with? This listener thought of 4. I haven't really given it any consideration yet. But he came up with 4. I'm not going to give what 4 there are. Why don't you think of it? I'll think of it, and I'll listen as you think of it. And if you want to call in next week with some of your 5-year rules related to retirement planning, go ahead. But he did give that little trivia question. How many different 5-year rules related to retirement planning can you think of? Let's see. 1 he got, 2, 3, 4. Well, I already got another one. I already got a 5th one, so I beat him on that. And you'll come up with 5 very easy as well. But pretty cute question. How many different 5-year rules can you come up with related to retirement planning? We'll chat about that. I already thought of one that he didn't think of. But maybe we'll chat about that next week as well.
Okay.
How much time do we have left?
We've got time for one more probably.
Cool. So we're going to get 4, more than
average.
More than a typical 3. Okay. Well, this is an email from Greg. That's not a question. This was something he wanted me to do.
In the wrong pile,
yes. Okay, well, I'll get back to Greg on that. Greg is an employee of ours. Those who don't know how his question got into my stack.
Maybe he sent it into the podcast. He wasn't getting an answer fast enough the other way.
Oh, well, here's one that kind of applies. The 72T question.
Oh, okay.
This is from July. Well, he doesn't say where he's from. People aren't telling me the state. Okay, but we will call him George. Much shorter question.
Much shorter.
Yes. I have a question about 72T payments. I have been given an offer for early retirement. I'm currently 52 years old and have $2 million in my retirement accounts. Can you talk about this rule? Oh, this is the one who wanted to know more. Can you talk about this rule and how I can access my funds so as to avoid the 10% early withdrawal penalty? Well, that's not a question. He's asking us to describe 72T. This is the question I was referencing. I knew I had one. I saw it. We'll do that on an EDU show, listener. Sorry to psych you out. It's not. He's asking generally how 72T works, and that's going to take more than I have enough time to on this show. So we'll get to another question. How's that?
Probably a good idea.
You'll notice all these questions that are remaining are the wicked long ones. Well, here's somebody asking me if I saw the recent article ranking Kentucky as one of the 10 worst states to retire to. No, I haven't, but thank you. Okay, but she asks a real question as well. Mm-hmm. This might take us longer than a few minutes to answer, but I think you can keep it pithy. Is there a good way to determine if doing a Roth conversion is a good idea, even if we would have to take the taxes out of the actual conversion? We will be post 59.5, so no 10% penalty. We believe our tax bracket will be the same depending on what happens with the 2026 tax law changes. And we do not feel we need to tap this money for at least 10 years. So what are your thoughts to give her?
I think
things
we keep
she
it
should look for.
Kind of pithy. First of all, once you're after 59.5 and have gotten away from the early withdrawal penalties, paying for the taxes on the conversion from the proceeds of the conversion or proceeds from the account itself is not that big a deal. That's totally fine. The reason why we don't recommend you do it before that is because you essentially increase the taxes you're going to pay on the conversion by subjecting extra distributions to pay the taxes to the 10% early withdrawal penalty. But once you're past that, it's, you know, whether you're paying it out of the conversion or paying it out of your pocket, it's going to be the same net amount of tax that you owe. So it really doesn't matter. What matters more are what you see your tax rates doing, your tax brackets doing, not only while you're in your current situation, but also in potential other situations, and those other situations mainly being if one of the two of you pass away. There's a what we call the widow-widower tax penalty, where when a year after the first person passes away, the survivor is filing single, which compresses all the tax brackets. So you said you think you're going to be in the same tax bracket. I bet you're looking at while you're married. Well, one of you is going to predecease the other one almost for sure, unless you die simultaneously. But there's usually one person who lives on several years at least after the first passes away, and there could be a huge tax penalty there. So sometimes doing conversions, even if it's not going to, quote, save you money, if you're converting now, you're at least creating tax surety. You're converting at a known rate today, not subjecting future distributions or conversions to rates that you don't even know what they're going to be. Now, you could always cross your fingers and hope that rates in the future are going to be lower than they are today. I wouldn't hold your breath for that. Most people believe that tax rates net overall are going to be increased, especially for people who have actually saved money. So they're wealthy enough to actually have money in a retirement account. The tax rates are not going to be going down. And you pointed out during the, you know, right now during the tax cuts before 2026, when they're set to go up, even if you're in the same tax bracket now versus after that, you're going to save money by having the taking advantage of the lower tax rates in those brackets until the tax rate sunset in 2026. So there's, you know, there's a lot of things to think about there, but I would, the main thing I wanted to look like you were thinking about most of these things, but the one thing I wanted to really enforce that you look at are any potential survivorship issues where the survivor of the couple gets hit with massive taxes, or massive means up into a higher tax bracket you wish you weren't in after the first person passes away. And you could avoid that possibly by converting early.
I'd like to add a little bit to that, because I agree with what he said, but I want to just go and add a few other thoughts. Keep in mind, you said you're over the age of 59 and a half. You're post 59 and a half. Keep in mind, 2 years after the conversion, every conversion, 2 years later, that earnings, not earnings amount, but that tax return 2 years later will be looked at for IRMA surcharges on Medicare premiums, income-related monthly adjusted amount. When you turn 65, you didn't say how far above 59 and a half you are. Are you just one day beyond and you got five more years before you hit 65? Or are you 63, 64 right now? Every conversion you do, that gets added to your taxable income, whether you cover the taxes with money from the conversion or whether you cover it with money that's in a bank account, that doesn't matter. The full conversion is added as taxable income. Make sure that taxable income doesn't push you into levels that would subject you to IRMA. Yep. IRMA is based on a tax return from 2 years earlier. So when you're 65 going on Medicare, they're going to be looking at your tax return, not from 64, but from 63. So keep that in mind. And the conversion you do in the year you turn 65, that's going to be looked at in the year you're 67. And right now, the limits for married couples are pretty high, $170,000. But it's a cliff, $1 over. $1 over, you're subject to the full premium surcharge, which will add a few thousand dollars per person. And he doesn't indicate, or this listener, I don't know if it's a male or female, doesn't indicate is both the same age. They said just indicated post 59 and a half. Again, you didn't indicate your current ages. So I want to throw that out there. Keep Irma in consideration. Also, you indicated you're going to be in the same tax bracket. You feel you're going to be in the same bracket now as you are later, even though you're going to have 10 years before you need it. Technically speaking, and you've pointed this out before, Chris, a conversion would be a wash. All things staying equal if you're in the same bracket. Now, in the future, tax brackets can rise, and then a conversion would have made sense. But correct me if I'm wrong. If she's in the same bracket today as she's going to be in the future, dollar for dollar, the conversion is a moot point.
Unless the bracket percentages change, what they are between now and 2026, they will.
Given that caveat.
Yeah, so if they're the same rates, if the bracket you're in is going to be the same at the same rate, whether you convert now or convert later, you're going to end up with the same amount of money.
She addresses that. We believe our tax bracket will be the same depending on the 25-26 tax law change. And we do not feel we need to tap the money for at least 10 years. So I don't know if they're going to stay the same. I don't know the calculations you're doing to assume you're going to be in the same bracket, because in 2026 they do change, they rise. So I don't quite know. I mean, right now it makes sense to me you should be in a lower bracket and you should be in a higher bracket in the future. But you seem fairly confident you're going to be in the same bracket. So, again, I'm not sure what math you're looking at, or maybe you didn't give us all the information. So I'm talking in generalities. Perfect. I nailed it.
Yeah.
That was easy.
I don't know about nailed it, but you eventually got there. Nailed it is just boom, you got it.
I got it.
You fumbled into it.
We're talking
kind of like when Edelman fumbled that ball and that guy picked it up and ran it into the end zone.
Ha ha ha. Yeah, Edelman, who won us our Super Bowl, won many, I suppose, was a Super Bowl MVP last year. He did cost us, or was part of the reason. I'm not just going to blame him.
No, but it was a fumbling example, since we were talking about fumbling.
It was, since you want to keep dragging in the New England Patriots' devastating loss to the Baltimore Ravens last night. Not last night, Sunday night, excuse me. Back to what I was trying to say to her. In addition to Irma, if you really feel you are in the same bracket today as you're going to be in 5, 10, 15 years, and you don't need this money, Chris has pointed out many, many times, it's a wash. It's a moot point at that time. I have often said, I feel taxes will go up, but of course, they've been going down. So who knows? But I can't see how taxes aren't eventually going to rise. But it is the way she explained it, Chris, to me, or he, why do I keep saying she? Oh, she gave her real name from Minnesota at the beginning, and the name indicates it's a female. What I'm saying is right now, I don't know if a conversion makes sense.
I don't know if she was asking us to say for sure whether it was. It's just, what should she consider? And I think we've given her some good food for thought about what things to consider. I think she needs to make sure she's considering Irma, like you said. She's considering the ramifications of survivorship issues, which, you know, changes might very well change the, we assume we're going to be in the same tax situation in the future as we are today. That may not be true with one of you alive versus two. And that can be an argument then for converting now, really with no downside, because whether you, if as married couple, you're in the same taxes, same tax rate, converting now, converting later, it's a wash. But if you can convert now and protect the survivor from an increase in taxes, there's your argument right there for maybe doing a conversion, as long as you don't shoot yourself in the foot with Irma or the loss of ACA premium tax credits other things that are related. Think about the side effects of recognizing income.
The final thing I want to encourage you to do is form a baseline. It's hard for me to say do this, do that, do the other thing. Begin with a baseline, listener. Figure out if you did nothing. That's the baseline. You just don't do any conversions. What are your required minimum distributions going to be when they begin? and assume they're going to begin at 70.5 for now. The Secure Act hasn't passed yet to delay that to 73. Just assume they're going to begin at 70.5. And you don't give us enough information, but you have to look at what those RMDs are going to cause the older you, both as a couple and as a widow or a widower. And what I'm getting at especially is Social Security taxation. Depending on what your income is going to be, maybe if you bit the bullet and got a lot of money into the Roth, your income could be low enough where some or a good portion, or maybe all, but I doubt all, of your Social Security would be tax-free. Because Social Security is under different tax rules than normal income. So you really got to look to see if the RMDs are going to impact your Social Security as well. Because then you continue to delay your Social Security to 70, continue to convert, get a lot of that money from an IRA into a Roth IRA where the distributions are now tax-free, and maybe your Social Security is now going to also be fully or partially tax-free, more so than it would have been if you did no conversions. And you've got to compare that. So it's hard for anyone. You know how many times we are asked by people who work with us, should we be converting? And we tell them, well, we got to do an analysis for that. And they think it's just, well, take these numbers and then just tell me here, scratch it on the back of an envelope. What should I do? There are so many variables we have to look at. Mm-hmm. So you got to look at what those RMDs are going to do. And look at your charitable intent. If you are charitably inclined and you normally tithe to your church or give money to charities, maybe converting makes no sense because RMDs can be addressed with QCDs, qualified charitable distributions. Bear in mind, listener, when you turn 70.5 and RMDs begin, you can also start donating those RMDs directly to a charity as a qualified charitable distribution. You don't have to declare them as income, and you don't have to pay taxes on them. And it's a wonderful way to lower RMDs. So if you are charitably inclined, and maybe you're thinking of leaving a lot of money at your death to a charity, well, why wait till then? Start giving it away at 70.5.
And why pay taxes on it now when they
exactly.
could receive it tax-free?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Why convert it now to lower RMDs if you were thinking of giving a lot of it away? So you're asking for things you got to look at. I'm giving you things you got to look at.
Yep.
It's not just saying I'm going to be in the same tax bracket and I don't think taxes are going to change. I disagree with that. I think your math is wrong. I think you're in a lower tax bracket now because of the Trump tax cuts, and they will be higher in the future. I don't know if this law is going to be. Maybe she thinks that if Trump gets reelected, they'll be extended. I don't know. But even if he did, and he could extend them until he's out of office, remember, they expire in 2026. He'd be out of office anyways if he got reelected. I don't think these tax cuts are going to be extended after 2026. So I think rates are going to go higher. So these are some of the things that I would be looking at if I was you, and I would do it by creating a baseline. Try to figure out what your taxes are going to look like if you did nothing. Now, we have software that does all that. That's not a shout out to say, hey, hire us. I'm just telling you there is software that exists for that. It exists at the advisor level. I don't know of any program that you do-it-yourselfers can do that's going to have the ability to project what your future income is going to be, what your RMDs are going to be, how they're going to impact taxation on Social Security and IRMA surcharges and all of this. But there are software programs that advisors have access to that do a lot of this. And this is some of the reasons we have to tell people who work with us, Chris, determining if you should convert is not a simple decision. We have to look at its impact to Irma. We have to look at its impact to Social Security. We have to look at your charitable intents. And could you accomplish a lot of it just by using QCDs and not worrying about conversions? These are some of the things you've got to look at. But also, a final thing, because I know we got to wrap up, who ultimately is going to inherit the money? Chris talked about the impact to the widow-widower. I'm taking it one step further and saying, who's going to ultimately get the money? Are you leaving that to charity? Then to hell with conversions,
right,
because they can inherit your IRA tax-free anyways and close it. And there's no need for you to pay taxes now to leave a Roth IRA to a charity. That's a tax-free asset. You don't want to leave a tax-free asset to a charity. You want to leave that to a person. But if they're going to be inherited by your children, if your children are in lower tax brackets than you, you might want to just leave the account to your children and let them pay the taxes. Now, of course, that exposes your children to the abolishment of the stretch IRA and them having to close it within 5 years, and they may now be in a higher bracket. I get that. That's, again, one of the things you got to look at. But if you're thinking of leaving your retirement accounts to your child and he or she is a very successful surgeon pulling in $400,000, $500,000 a year because they're brilliant in their chosen field and you're in the 22% bracket, say, you might want to convert
away.
Away. Exactly. Because the money is going to be inherited by someone who is going to be in a massive bracket. And especially if they have to close it within 5 years, if the or 10 years, if the changes that the government wants to make to non-spousal beneficiaries inheriting IRAs, in other words, the abolishment of the stretch IRA and forcing non-spouse beneficiaries to close the accounts in 5 or 10 years after the death of the owner, then yes, you may want to convert even into a higher bracket than you're in now, as long as you stay in a lower bracket than the children who are going to inherit it. So you see all these moving parts, listener? These are all some of the things you should be considering as you're trying to decide if you can convert. And for those of you out there who are wondering, why do you have to do a lot of calculations, or why do advisors sometimes have to charge more than what you thought they were going to charge to determine if you can convert? Any advisor who is simply only looking at tax brackets and saying, well, you're going to be in a higher tax bracket in the future, you definitely want to convert, or you're going to be in a lower tax bracket, you definitely don't want to convert, or you're going to be in the same tax bracket, so I don't care, I'm agnostic on what you do, that advisor doesn't know what he or she is doing. If that's the only thing they're looking at is brackets, they're idiots. There are so many other moving parts.
Yep. So thanks, everybody, for hanging with us on another Q&A show. We do want to remind everybody we are living, breathing, practicing financial planners, specializing in retirement planning here in Northern Colorado, although we help clients throughout the whole country. If you'd like to talk with us further about the retirement planning services we offer, look for us at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there you can schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion, which is a free introductory meeting where we can talk to you a little bit more about what we do, what you're looking to have done, and see if it's a good fit. So we really appreciate everybody listening, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556. Let's start recording some of the
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.